Grace, the Amy Santiago of Royal Bloggers.
And I'm Jessica, the Dorothy Sporanath of Royal Bloggers.
And we'd like to welcome you to On Air, the podcast where two cynical Brits discuss the latest royal news and the truth behind the stories. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the On Air podcast. So to start with, let's just throw back to the end of last episode. I said this was going to be a royal wedding special. Mm-hmm. Now, the royal wedding happened and it was very lovely, but also really boring. So yeah. It's not going to be a royal wedding special at all. And it's actually going to be a pre-coronation special. And then you can all listen to it. Every single one of you can listen to it and get your friends to listen to it. So when you watch the coronation, you're going to be really prepared.
Yeah, so sorry to Princess Alexandra of Luxembourg, but to be fair, we didn't actually see any of the wedding or any of the civil ceremony either. It was just arrivals and departures. So it's not really that interesting. And we kind of thought if we've got something else we can talk about, which is a big deal and probably take a lot of time, so we might as well just cut back. So sorry to Alexandra.
Congratulations, but we're moving on.
Yeah, exactly. So in preparation for this, I actually watched the Queen's coronation the whole way through for the very first time. The actual coverage of the Queen's coronation was about 8 hours.
I know. I was so surprised because in my head it was an hour long service and I hadn't got around to watching it yet. And then I saw a tweet being like, Charles's coronation is going to be about 2 hours. Mm-hmm. And that's so much shorter than the Queen's. And I was like, no, yeah. You're telling me a little trick here, guys. And then I watched it and it took a while.
Yeah, it was about 3 hours, but obviously, you know, there was more coverage around the coronation for the Queen's 5 hours than there was of the actual coronation itself. So I think we can kind of, I don't exactly know when the coverage starts. I don't know if you know that, but we can still expect before anything actually happens in the coronation, I think the first thing that everyone will experience is the TV coverage, which is always classic with royal events. I mean, I don't know, everybody will watch a different live stream, but I watched the BBC one. And so there's a lot of like talking heads, a lot of really random people who they invite to sit on a sofa and talk about how important King Charles is. And they just repeat the same stuff over and over again. And then occasionally it'll cut to like, I imagine it will cut to like the Abbey and they'll have like empty chairs.
Yeah, they'll be filming the altar and being like, and this is where it will happen. The coronation. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of like when you're watching a royal wedding and you don't ever go in and be like, I'm excited to see the guests, but it's always that little kind of moment of excitement when they're like, you're like, oh, I know that really minor celebrity, and oh, that's the Duke of Kent's third child's best friend, and it's like, why do I know this information? But it's in there and it's quite exciting to spot them.
The way that the coverage is set up is so funny because they'll have somebody on the sofa in the studio and they'll be doing like a really important story about like how their mother was on her deathbed and then she got a letter from the Queen and that gave her the courage to fight the cancer that she had and how she miraculously recovered because of the Queen's letter and now she's still alive and happy. And then the interviewer person will just be like, I'm sorry, we've got to interrupt you at this emotional crescendo of their story. And they'd be like, we've got to interrupt you because Rowan Atkinson has arrived at the Abbey. And I was like, that's not important at all.
And it's always like they're just walking down, because like, obviously they're just walking into an abbey, so they're just walking down, they walk past like people, so the camera keeps getting cut off, and then they lose sight of them in the abbey, and then they have to try and find them again. It's great, honestly. My favourite part of any royal event is the arrivals.
But yeah, so we are expecting a lot of royal guests, and over the last couple of weeks, we started to find out more about who's going to go. I've got a list of people who I think are confirmed. From Belgium, Philippe and Mathilde. The King and Queen of Bhutan, Crown Princely Couple of Denmark, the Crown Princely Couple of Japan, King Abdullah and Queen Rania from Jordan, the Grand Ducal Couple of Luxembourg, Albert and Charlene from Monaco, King Willem-Alexander and Queen Maxima from the Netherlands, the Crown Princely Couple of Norway, King Felipe and Queen Letizia of Spain, King Carl Gustaf and Crown Princess Victoria of Sweden, and then the King and Queen of Thailand. Have I missed anybody? I haven't seen a lot of confirmation around like the African monarchies like Lesotho or Morocco or some of the Arab states. But I don't know if that's just because I'm looking at very European sources or if it's because they haven't confirmed.
The only other ones I had confirmed were the Maori King and Queen.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, there's a good showing. And there's been, I mean, I'm not going to get into this because I think this is almost worthy of a whole episode in itself. But there has been a lot of nonsense the last few weeks around this guest list. And about, not so much about the royal guests, but about like who's invited and who's not invited. And I think you know, I'm not, as I say, I'm not going to get into it in too much detail, but it's limited seating this time around compared to last time around. And ultimately, this is a state occasion and not a family reunion or a birthday party. So if somebody doesn't get invited, tough. You know, not everybody is entitled to be invited to the coronation, basically.
You know, like looking at it, it's a really impressive list. But then, like, also that these people are there doing a job of representing their country. Like, they're all there to do a job for a, like a big, it's like a big work meeting, and like they're sending delegates for different branches of the business. So what I imagine like a McDonald's meeting is, you have like the chief McDonald's and then like the Birmingham McDonald's and the Leicester McDonald's, they all send a couple of people. This is this.
Yes, it's exactly like a McDonald's work conference.
I think they're very similar.
Yeah. I do have an irrational thing that I'm bothered by.
We love irrational things.
We love irrational things. So I think in the last episode it was, we talked about the fact that there might not be tiaras and about how, you know, obviously we love to see tiaras, but ultimately we were never guaranteed tiaras. It doesn't really matter. So, you know, it's just something you have to accept. Now, saying that, my version of being annoyed about tiaras is being annoyed about the fact that there are kings and queens who are going. So, long story short, it has been tradition that the British monarch who is being crowned is like the most senior person in the room, because they're the one being crowned. And so as a result of that, like at the Queen's coronation, there were no other kings and queens, like crowned kings and queens. There was just like crown princes and princesses and things, and that was kind of the level of people who went. It wasn't the kings and queens, whereas this time around we've got multiple, so you know, King Carl Gustav and King Felipe and King Philippe of Belgium. So we've got quite a lot of kings and queens who are going, and the families where it's like the crown prince or crown princess are mostly like Denmark and Norway, where the King Harald doesn't travel a lot because he's not very well, and Queen Margrethe recently had surgery, so they're only going because the monarch is unavailable. And look, it doesn't impact anybody at all. It is a completely arbitrary rule. And there was no guarantee that it was going to happen, because it doesn't actually have to happen in order for the coronation to go ahead, that they have to exclude kings and queens. And yet I'm still weirdly annoyed by it.
My complete conspiracy theory, which has absolutely no grounding in any knowledge whatsoever, is that they all just want to go to like a proper coronation, because all the kings and queens are older than William, and William could like completely do away with everything and just sign a notebook or something. So they're like, this is our one chance. I'm not sending my 18-year-old daughter when I could go instead. So they were like, we're going. And I just like to imagine there's a little bit of a behind the scenes thing where the like young crown princesses were like, oh, this is so exciting, my first coronation, and all the parents were like, you're not going, this is our thing.
Yeah, but I think it's interesting, like the emperor and empress of Japan are not going. And I wonder if that is kind of because they are more senior than Charles. The other kings and queens are equal, but they're more senior.
Yeah, that's what I assumed, because like the emperors are like the top dogs, so they don't go. But then all the kings and queens are like equal, so it's more like peers. And then you get the little tiny crown prince and princesses.
Once everybody's arrived and taken their seats, we have the procession. And so that starts off at Buckingham Palace and takes them to Westminster Abbey, where the coronation will take place. And they are in the Diamond Jubilee state coach, I believe.
Which has air conditioning.
Yeah, I know. Lovely. I don't even have air conditioning in my flat. And that was a gift to the Queen for her Diamond Jubilee. And there's a few different carriages that they have. This one is more comfortable. It's more modern. And so that's one of the reasons why they're using it. And it is actually a really incredible object. Like, I was reading up on it, and it was made with pieces of wood from Lord Nelson's ship, from the Tower of London, from the Mayflower, from the Houses of Parliament. Like, it's a really historic, for something that was created not that long ago, it's a really sort of historical object. It's really interesting. But yeah, I wasn't, to be honest, there's been so many things that have been announced that I'm honestly not that clear who is in this procession on the way there. Obviously the King and Queen, beyond that I'm not really sure.
Yeah, because I was comparing it to the Queen's one, the 1953 coronation, and it was literally everyone. I mean, not like I separated my guests into like boring guests and important guests, which is also what they did, because they had all the boring guests arrive at 6 and then all the important guests at 8:30, which is not my fault, that is on them. But anyway, point is, in the procession they had like the important guests, obviously, and they had officials, and like Commonwealth heads and heads of state and royals, and they were all in carriages and in like reverse order, getting like bigger and flashier. And I was on this, I found a website that was all about like the clothes of the coronation, and they were like, they went in order of seniority and also in order of how well they were dressed. So you ended up with like, before the queen, the last one was the queen mother, and she was like glamorous. And then like before that was Margaret. So it was like, they were building up to the big one, to the queen. But I mean, I mean, I've not heard anything about, we haven't had any confirmation of anyone else being in this procession. It could literally just be Charles and Camilla, or they could have, and I imagine Charles and Camilla are going to be the only one in a carriage no matter what happens. But whether or not they'll have, you know, like the other working royals in cars, or you know, Rishi Sunak, is he going to, I don't understand how they're all going to do it. And also it's a lot shorter, the procession, because I know they're going Buckingham Palace to Westminster Abbey, but they're not doing quite as many detours on the way there.
Yeah. And we'll get to the other procession later on, but we know a lot more about that, and that's much longer. So maybe it is just going to be very simple of like, it's just Charles and Camilla in the coach, which I wouldn't be mad about.
Even though I think before it was like this massive procession, I also think that like, I would not want to be in charge of the security of every head of state in the world and many monarchs traveling in one predetermined route through London.
Yeah,
I don't want to be in charge of that. Like, we'll take two. We'll have two.
Do you remember the Queen's the Queen's funeral and the fuss about the fact that they were sending heads of state in a bus?
Like, how are they going to manage?
Yeah. on a bus, like a normal person. But yeah, so they might do that again. It'll just be like, Paul Gustav and Felipe on a bus together. That'd be cute. But yeah, so then eventually they'll arrive at Westminster Abbey, and then they have like the procession into the Abbey. And when I was watching the Queen's coronation, this was painfully slow. It took about 20, 25 minutes just for everyone to walk down the aisle. and I've been to Westminster Abbey. It's big, but it's not 25 minutes to walk from one end to the other. They were doing this really weird thing. I don't know if they got told they had to do this or if it's like a ceremonial thing, but normally when you take strides forward, and they were like stepping to the side and forward. So they basically weren't going forward as much as they could have if they'd just been walking, because they were kind of sidestepping at the same time. And so it took about 20, 25 minutes for all of the people to manage to process through. I think I'll go through who was in the Queen's and who's not in Charles's, but Charles's is definitely shorter.
Yeah, I can only hope it's not gonna be a 25 minute walk. They're going to be wearing these really heavy outfits, so I can definitely see what, and you know, they have to get out of a carriage, which is hard to do anyway, let alone when you're wearing a very, very heavy, I was like, cape's not the right word, robe, you know. And I think I can understand why someone would have gone, Charles, should we just cut a bit of this walking out for you? Should we just get you to a seat?
Yeah, so we actually did hear about the robes. So Charles is going to be wearing, they walk in and wearing robes of state, they're called.
Yeah, robes of state.
And we've heard, this happened after I wrote my notes, so I haven't actually got it written down, but as far as I remember, Charles is wearing King George VI's robes, and Camilla is wearing the Queen's robes, which is interesting. I didn't expect that. And they'll be like redone, but I remember reading a story about how apparently the robe that the Queen wore like didn't react very well with the carpet, and so she basically had to be pushed to get moving by one of the bishops. She asked, can you give me a boost, basically.
Start me off.
Yeah, can you start me off? That was what she said. And I think if it's anything like that, then yeah, it might take a little while to get through, but hopefully, because there's less people, it won't take 25 minutes. So in the Queen's coronation, the first people who were there were representatives of the Church of England. And I believe that there will be people who are representing the church from Charles's coronation who will come in as well. But there's also going to be representatives of other faiths.
Yes. And I only know that because I saw people complaining about it. This is how I learn things.
Yeah, there's a few different moments where a different face will be represented, but this is the first one and the first change from the original coronation that we definitely know is happening, which is, yeah, essentially, as well as having representatives of the Church of England walking in, there will be representatives of other faiths. I don't believe we know who they are, but... yeah, it's not a surprise because there's for many, many years, there's always been this idea that Charles wanted to, you know, change the coronation, and people were sort of saying that he wasn't even going to swear to be head of the Church of England anymore, which was always ridiculous. But, you know, I think it's a very important thing to Charles that he's very involved in interfaith relations and very close to the Jewish community, for example. And so I'm not at all surprised that it's only walking in at the end of the day. They're not doing anything else. They're just walking in. And so I think it's not surprising, and it is a kind of modernizing touch. So I liked that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I was reading about the last coronation, and it was the first coronation where there'd ever been a representative. Oh, not the first one, obviously, because there wasn't always the Church of England, but the first one for a very long time where there'd been a representative of another church than the Church of England, because they had a representative of the Church of Scotland. And I was reading like olden worldy opinion pieces of people being like, it's disrespectful, you are, you know, damaging the history, like no one will ever be Church of England again, what's the point? And I mean, I'm gonna say it didn't really have an impact.
No, not
so
at all.
I think people are really blowing this out of proportion.
Yeah, definitely. And this is also when the Cross of Wales comes in with this sort of religious group of people. And that's the bit that has, we heard in the last few weeks, has shards of the true cross, the cross that Jesus was crucified on, which Pope Francis gave to King Charles as a gift, which, I mean, nobody is ever going to be able to top that. Like, try buying King Charles a birthday or Christmas gift when the Pope gave him fragments of the cross that Jesus was allegedly crucified on. Like, that's a flex as a gift.
All I could think was, like, the Pope must be so easy for him to give presents. Because he could give anyone anything and be like, this is actually from St. Peter. And you'd be like, I can't tell the Pope he's a liar, but also I don't want this bit of string. But also, if it is a bit of St. Peter's robe, I can't get rid of it. So I would quite like to be the Pope in terms of Christmas present giving, because I would have a field day. I'd be like, ah, this is dust from St. Paul's house. Prove me right.
Yeah, exactly. Who's going to test these bits of wood? He could have just taken them off a chair in his house. We'll never know.
Broke a chair the other day and was like, oh, give them to Charles. I've not got the present. That'll do. Tell him it's from Jesus. Go on.
Tell him it's from Jesus. Yeah. And so I think after in the Queen's coronation, this is where we're going to start to see some of the cutting down, because obviously they're cutting down about an hour of the service. And so the question really is, where are they making those cuts? And I think the procession is one of those areas. So as I say, it took 25 minutes for everybody to walk in. I think it's going to be less than that this time. One of the reasons is immediately after the faith leaders in the Queen's coronation, she had members of the Knights, or she had the Knights of St. Michael and St. George, and then a bunch of people with other honorary positions. Then after that, it went to people who were from the Commonwealth. And I think that Charles is going straight from faith leaders to the Commonwealth and skipping out all of those knights and stuff.
Yeah, so he's got like the multi-faiths at the beginning. Then he's got like all the Christians.
Yeah.
Not every Christian ever. All the Christians. And then he's going straight to the Commonwealth rather than... And also, like, the Commonwealth realms, not like the entirety of the Commonwealth, there are less of them now. So... there's cutting down there as well.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I think that makes sense, because yeah, we don't need to see the knights of the order, you know, they've already got a knighthood. Do they really need to be invited to the coronation as well? I think they've had enough, you know.
Yeah, you've been to the palace, get over yourself.
Exactly. So I think of all the people to cut, I'm fine with those people being cut. The Commonwealth representatives, it said in the announcement that they will carry flags. But I don't know if is that literal? Because last time they just walked in.
Well, I think from what I heard, it was going to be like, not the flag of the Commonwealth, of their country. I think it was going to be like a banner.
Right.
Almost. When I used to be in Brownies on like Remembrance Sunday, we'd have to carry the Brownie flag in. And someone would have to stand there all, you know, church service. And we'd have to hold like there was a rainbow one, a brownie one, and a guide one. You just hold it. That's kind of what I'm imagining. It doesn't even get to wave because it's a flag and you're walking, so there's no wind.
The original footage of the Queen's coronation is quite fuzzy, so it's possible that they were wearing some kind of banner that represented their nation, like Miss World. but I just didn't see it because of the footage quality. But I was imagining when they said flags, I was like, is this going to be like the Olympics where it's like ginormous?
I was watching the One Show the other day and there was this whole bit about national flag makers and the people who make the flags for the coronation. And like, it was like, we're so busy. We've got to make all these Union Jacks. And I was like, I'm sure someone else would like the job if we're going to keep complaining. But like, who sets the size? It's just like someone send a memo like, can you all make sure your flags are 3 meters by 2 meters, please? Like, I don't know, like Canada, we're looking at you. You always get way too big with your flags.
Yeah. And then after the Commonwealth people, so this is the bit where I don't understand it. There's people who carry the standards of the quarterings of the Royal Arms and the standard of the Principality of Wales. And those people are aristocrats, basically, or people who have inherited the position over time. So this is, you know, very much a traditional royal thing. But I actually, again, don't really know what that actually means because... Again, it might be the footage quality from the Queen's coronation, but they did just look like men who walked in and just looked like everyone else. They weren't carrying anything impressive.
You know, like in Trooping the Colour, and they've got the colour, but it's, they've got it all folded up so you can't see it. It used to be like that, like they've got it with them, but like they're not like waving it around like you do at, you know, football matches. Like just, I have it in my hands.
Yeah, in my pocket. But then it gets into the biggie, the regalia, the crown jewels. Last time, it was all aristocrats, dukes and such, who carried in different items from the crown jewels that were important to the ceremony. This time around, this is a really big departure. I think Charles and Camilla have chosen for each of the items to be carried by people who are not aristocrat or not hereditary peers, essentially, people from different walks of life. So there are some aristocrats, but there's also religious figures, military figures, life peers, so people who are part of the peerage, but only because they achieved something in their life and got given the title. And I'm not going to read them out, mostly just because I have no idea who any of them are, except from Fleuella Benjamin, who's the TV presenter. And I think she's a campaigner for sort of equality and things since then, and is a baroness now. So that's the only person who I know about.
Fleuella Benjamin is my friend's mum is like best friends with Fleuella Benjamin.
Really?
So when we were little, we'd go to like her birthday party, Fleuella Benjamin would always be there, and my mum was always like, that's Fleuella Benjamin. I was like, that, I don't know who that is, but she was really nice. And then later on, I was like, that's Fleuella Benjamin. So yeah, that's my little fun fact. Like, I was like, every time she does anything, I'm like, my bestie Flo, hang on.
I love that she did Play School, which is a very big program when I remember watching Play School when I was younger. You know, as I say, not going to read out the whole list of people. You can find them online. But I think that there are some really interesting things that have happened that are different, because last time it was all aristocrats. So it was all men. It was all white men of a certain age, usually as well. This time around, it's going to be the first time that we're going to have parts of the regalia carried by people of colour into the coronation. Also, the sword is going to be carried by a female military officer, which is the first time that the sword has been carried by a woman. So, you know, it's, I was expecting, like, I don't know, like normal people, like, or people we all know, like Mary Berry and that kind of, like, that's what I was expecting. Or like somebody who works at a charity who's just a normal person and maybe has an OBE, but that's about it. So I wasn't expecting everybody on the list to have a really high military title or a peerage, you know, baroness title, which they do. It doesn't feel quite as ordinary as I thought it would, but it's still modernizing because there's still some really significant things that are a break from the past and some, you know, some firsts. And so, yeah, I think it's a good decision.
If you say you stopped the coronation at that point, like the amount of multiculturalism for like the different faiths, from the different people carrying things, from the Commonwealth realm flags, like some of the, you know, some of the people carrying things weren't born in the Commonwealth, like they live in England now, but, or they were born in the Commonwealth, not in the UK. So I think it is, it doesn't like sound very much, but if you compare it to the Queen's, which was like, this is a lord from England and his great, 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 great grandfather had the same name and title as him. Like, it's quite significantly different.
there was all these sorts of stupid stories about how Charles was going to destroy the traditions of the coronation. I don't think any of the things that he's doing are destroying tradition. They're just more modern, which is like, yeah, why should somebody get to carry the crown or the sword or whatever just because they're a duke?
There, I think a lot of the initial complaints almost came from the peerage, who were like, but that's our job. And I always think it's quite funny, because if you've gone up to them and said, please explain why it's your job, they would have to be like, because we're better than everyone else. And they can't say that. So, because there's no reason. There would have just been these people who would have assumed, based on their age and the Queen's age and Charles's age, that they had this role in the coronation. I bet they boasted about it, because I would. If I thought I had a sure-on job in a coronation, I'd be like, guys, I'm going to be carrying the sceptre of the dove or the order of the orb or something. And then if it didn't happen, I would literally be fuming. But I'm very glad it has changed from life, you know, peers, royals, dukes, to fancy normal people. This is how our podcast is going to go viral. It'll be like two young girls hating on the aristocracy.
Yeah, I mean, if somebody wanted to make me a duchess, I would change all of my opinions. But because I'm fickle. But yeah, I think it's the right decision for a coronation in 2023. This is not 1953 anymore. Life has changed, society has changed, and this is something that doesn't substantially change the bulk of or the meaning of the coronation, but is a modernizing choice. So good job, Charlie boy. Then we get into the kind of meat of the actual coronation, once they've walked their 25 minutes up to the front of the abbey.
Like, at this point, you know, they've done the whole I was glad cracking aisle walking song. And you've got all the kids up there holding the trains. The Westminster School boys and girls, I assume it's multi-sex now, I don't even know, are going to do some of the shouting as they come in, because there's some traditional shouty bits. And I remember reading about it, and they were like, oh, they're going to get children involved, and it's just Westminster School, who do everything, because they're at the school after Westminster Abbey. But, I mean, it's not for the kids.
So, yeah, they'll all be up at the front. And then the first sort of general stage of a coronation, because it's sort of basically there's set things that, you know, the stuff around it has changed, but the core of the ceremony has always remained the same. And the first stage is the recognition. And from watching Lizzie's coronation, well, basically what happens is the monarch stands next to the throne and they're presented to the people in the abbey by the archbishop, who says basically like the monarch will serve the nation. Do we agree to serve the monarch? And then everybody shouts, now God save the king. And Lizzie then curtsied. So I assume Charles will bow. Essentially that moment is like the public recognizing that the king is their legitimate monarch. And for Lizzie, they did it in each section of the abbey. So the royal family, the peers, the other guests, they basically turned her around. So she had to face every side of the abbey and did the recognition for each side, and everybody in each bit said, God save the queen.
And I referred to it in my notes as the fancy lords do some pledges, which is what happened. I'm really interested to know if Camilla is going to be wandering around with Charles, because they're both being crowned. So obviously they've both got a coronation within the service, but obviously the only televised one we have to go off is Lizzie's, and she was doing it solo. So they could go either way. And I think because it's like, in my head, it makes sense for them to do it together, but also it's going to look really funny, them just like trotting around the church together in these massive robes.
So, yeah. Well, it's interesting because I think if you look at the liturgy, which was just released, so that's like the order of service, basically, it seems like it's not going to be quite the same where they present, like last time they presented to one side of the abbey where all the peers are sitting, and they turn around and they go to the peeresses, so the wives of the peers who were all sitting there, and then they go out to the main bit of the coronation of the church where everybody else is sitting, and they all pledge. And this time around, it seems like there's individual people who are going to be up there who are kind of doing it as an individual rather than them being presented to each side of the abbey. So maybe they'll be in like a line in front of them and they won't have to turn around.
Yeah, that might make sense. Because when I was first reading through the liturgy, I was reading the first bit and I was like, oh, this is nice. And then I scrolled down and I said, oh wait, this is the recognition. That's just the welcome. And I forget it's like a church service as well. But it's like a literal, I don't say a Sunday service because it's not quite that extreme, but it is a full-on church service. There's a welcome and there's a communion, and I forget that. And then I was like, oh wait, this here we kick into like the real shebang up on the altar. This is nothing to do with anyone to bring, but when I go to, anytime I go to a wedding, I always get confused that the vows are in like the first 5 minutes. So I'm like, what is the rest of it? Why are we still here? You've done it. You're man and wife in the first 5 minutes of the service. But it is kind of like embedded into a service. So it doesn't feel more like, Charles, do you want to be king? Sure. Great. Now sit here for 2 more hours.
So the next bit, in the Queen's coronation, this is all kind of part of the oath. So the liturgy for Charles is separates the oath out, but we're going to put it all as a oneer because it all sort of happened at the same time. And this is done from the wee chair. There's a bunch of chairs, but there's a wee chair that she sits in for a while, or he sits in for a while, called the chair of estate. That's where it was done from with the Queen's. And this is kind of a bit of a boring bit. Yeah, so what happened with the Queen's is the monarch swears to uphold the law and uphold the Church of England. And then they do it again on a Bible after they've already sworn it once. And then they sign a copy of what they've just sworn. And then the Bible that she swore on was brought to her. And yes, for the first time in the Queen's coronation, it was done by the moderator of the General Assembly of the Church of Scotland. I think that shows, firstly, that the Queen did have her own modern moments in her own way. It's not quite as drastic as having people from different faiths, but she did have moments that upset people and that were seen as like, oh, this is very modernizing, and isn't this destroying the traditions of the coronation and blah, blah, blah. So Charles isn't alone in that. I think every generation thinks that the monarch is ruining the coronation. but he's following that thing, and he's going to have the Bible presented by the moderator of the General Assembly of the Church of Scotland again.
That used to be David Tennant's dad for a long time. It's not anymore because he's dead, but for a long time, that's his job. Yes. But yeah, I think the Queen kissed the Bible, so I wonder if Charles is going to kiss it. But also, I feel like whoever is in charge of getting that pen for him to sign that poem is going to be so tense. They've probably checked it so many times that it's going to run out of ink because they keep checking it, and it's going to be a disaster. But I also feel like nothing would be funnier than giving him a pen that doesn't work at that moment.
Yeah, oh, that would be brilliant, wouldn't it? Yeah, he's notorious for not getting on very well with pens. It's a very weird order they have to do things. In the Queen's thing, the Bible definitely came after she gave the oath. And whereas in the liturgy for the King, it's the presentation of the Bible comes before the oath. So I don't really know if that is a difference, or if it's just wrong in the liturgy, or if I don't know exactly. But what I described is what happened with the Queen's. There was just a lot of like swearing it, then swearing it on a Bible, and then swearing it in a written form, just to make sure. Did it 3 times.
I think it makes sense for the Bible bit to go first before the oath, because it's like we get all this sort of,
yeah,
like tricky bits out the way first, and then we'll get into the big thing. But
yeah, it might be like they're not reaffirming it. Like with the Queen, she swore it once, then she swore it on the Bible, and then she signed the copy of the oath. Whereas with Charles, maybe he's just getting presented the Bible straight away and swearing it on the Bible straight away rather than doing it twice.
Yeah, just like straight in, straight out. He knows what he's doing. That's how he's getting things down. No 3 oath type things. This is a 1 time.
But yeah, there's a lot of like religious singing. And to be honest, a lot of this stuff I would cut back. But
this is the church stuff.
Yeah, this is the church stuff.
I did it.
But to be fair, I also, that's what I would cut back. But I don't know if like that is necessary to the religious part of it. Like if that's really important and they would be really angry at me if I wanted to cut it back. Or sometimes like at events, there'll be a musical performance because something else is happening elsewhere. And so maybe they're like, I don't know, blessing something, or they're moving the Bible around, or I don't know. And they have to have a musical performance to kind of cover that time period while they're doing something else. I don't know. So maybe that has to happen.
It is the part of the coronation before the anointing, and Charles has got to do a quick change before the anointing. So maybe this is quick. I imagine it's not going to be a quick change. It's going to be a very slow change, getting all these things off and having to put a little vest on. So... but yeah, I mean, this is where, you know, Rishi Sunak does this little reading. I bet he is so excited for. He's like, oh, you might have got the funeral, Liz, but I get the coronation.
Yeah. So there's like a lot of after the actual oath is taken, there's some singing, there's a prayer, there's more singing,
Then there's some more prayer, and then Rishi does his epistle. And Rishi is our prime minister. I understand why it's him, but at the same time, he's not a very charismatic speaker, so it's not going to be that interesting, I don't think.
And then, just before the anointing, they do a bit of blessing of the holy oil. And now you're like, oh, we're back in it. We're back in the coronation.
Yeah, after, like, in the liturgy, it's like 3 pages of just singing and chatting. And again, I'm sure it's very important to the church service, but when I was watching the Queen's, I knew in my head, like, okay, it goes recognition, oath, anointing, and so on. And so I was like, well, the oath is done, and I'm waiting for the anointing. So this, it feels like filler when you're watching it. I don't know if it'll be the same. But yeah, that's so that it's not the most exciting bit. When they get into the anointing, that's when we start getting into the exciting bit again.
Maybe it's just like when you go get a cup of tea. So you've watched like the 3 hours of coverage before, you've watched the procession, you've watched the first like half an hour of the service. So now when they're getting into this whole singing, you go get your cup of tea. It's like, right, go to the toilet. I'll be back down for the anointing. So it's actually quite helpful.
Yeah. If you take nothing away from this podcast, we're going to give you the best times to go and make a cup of tea or go for a loo break. And that is right after the oath and before the anointing is the best time to go. You've heard it here first. Yeah. So the anointing, yeah, as you say, it starts off with like a blessing of the oil, which is the Archbishop of Canterbury is presented with the oil by the Most Reverend Dr. Hassam Naum, I don't know, who is the Anglican Archbishop in Jerusalem, because the oil is from Jerusalem.
From the Garden of Gethsemane or something. It's like proper religious oil.
I know, like, he wasn't happy enough just having some bits of Jesus's cross. He also had to have oil from the Holy Land.
Like, he was like, I want everything, the best things. It's all been blessed by, like, literally every single person in the world already. Yeah. So yeah. They're just doing it publicly now.
Yeah. And we got confirmation. The only thing I actually wanted to see in the coronation, I really didn't mind any of the other stuff that happened. The only thing I wanted, as I've said several times, is Zadok the priest, because I think that is such, like, watching the Queen's coronation again, I've seen that moment. Like, I've never watched the whole thing the whole way through and sat and watched it, but I've seen bits of it, obviously. And the bit that I think everyone knows is when she's being anointed and Zadok the priest is, Zadok the priest, is sung. And it's, I don't know how many people are in the choir, but it feels like hundreds and hundreds of people are singing it because it's just so impactful. And the song is basically about Solomon, who was anointed by Zadok the priest. And so it's a song about anointing. And that's why it's sung. And yes, we are getting Zadok the priest again. Yay!
Every time I listen to Zadok the priest, I'm always like, I know it's got worse, but I forget until they go into Zadok the priest. I'm like, whoa, now they're singing. And it's exciting. And I did go onto a YouTube video last night and I was looking at the comments and I was neutral and was like, ooh, who's getting chills that we're going to see this in a real coronation? Like, who's here April 2023 before the coronation? And I was like, it just feels like that's such a bizarre, it's like, it's such a human thing to go to a video and be like, who's here? Because you just saw this in, you know, EastEnders last night.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, one of those really human things to do, to be like, I was here.
I was here, and yeah.
It's just very sweet. And I'm very glad it's there because it's so impactful and powerful and it gives me chills and it's great. I'm always going to be talking, I'm like, shush, this is my song.
This is the moment. This is my jam. Zadok the priest. when it comes on in the club, you know, me and my girls go, no. But the anointing is the first time that the monarch goes to St. Edward's chair, King Edward's chair, or St. Edward. I think he was both, wasn't he? He was both.
Yeah. Yeah. He became a saint.
which is also being used this time around. And they have released some pictures of the chair. The chair dates back to the 13th century. They've been working to restore it, given how fragile it is. And so that's why they've released some pictures of it as part of the restoring. And it's also why the monarch, I think, doesn't sit on it for much of the ceremony anymore, because it's so old and they don't want the chair to break in the middle of the coronation. That would not be seen as a good omen. But I love this chair. I've never loved a chair before.
it's a proper sturdy chair.
The thing I love about it is, so yeah, it's an incredibly old item. Like, it's older than some countries. And so, like, there's graffiti on the back like that has been carved in by tourists and by school children, that's like such and such slept in this chair in the 18th and 19th century, or the chair was originally damaged in the bombing in World War II and then was kind of restored. And so it actually reminded me weirdly of Crown Princess Victoria did this documentary in about the Royal Palace. Well, it was a documentary about the Royal Palace and she appeared in it. And she talked about tapestries, and I've never heard any woman get, or any person get that excited about tapestries before. But she was talking about how when she did work experience, they washed the tapestries and she saw all the dirt coming out, and about how for her, that dirt was like the accumulation of those tapestries having been there for hundreds of years, and like the smoke from the ships that had gone past, and you know, from the candles at dinners that had been held in that room where the tapestries were hung. And so it wasn't just dirt to her, it was like living history coming out of this tapestry. And it was, I thought it was a really interesting way to look at it. And I think that's what I really like about this chair is that it isn't pristine. It's a chair that's existed for like 700 years and has lived throughout those 700 years. So I love that it's got graffiti on the back and that it's, you know, a little bit rickety looking. And like, I don't know, I'm glad that it's there, because to me it's like an example of how history is alive in a way. Does that sound cheesy and rubbish?
No, it's like when I went to the British Museum and I saw the Rosetta Stone for the first time and I cried. And oh. I was just like, it's real important thing. And you know, like maybe we shouldn't have it in the British Museum, but it's like this incredible thing that changed the world, and it's just there in front of you. And I think like when I went to Westminster Abbey, and like it's just tucked in the corner, like this historic chair is literally just in like a little room in the corner of the Abbey, and it's like it's so important. And it's been like so many kings and queens have sat on it, but also like before it was the special chair, like children played around it, and you know, and it's, and I think I know when I was in Westminster Abbey I was feeling a bit weird, because I was like, I was finding it, you know, it's such a historic place, but then people are just like walking on Charles Darwin, because there's so much to see. Like if he was in his cemetery, people would be like, oh, you'd give Charles Darwin some respect, but they're just like strolling on over him. So it was a really weird moment, but it was just felt like one of those things that, you know, it is, I mean, it's just a chair, it's a nice chair, but it is this real kind of moment where you're like, you know, you can have all your opinions on coronations and monarchies and all of that, but people in, you know, the year 1200 would have been around when they would have gone, oh, do you wear the king sat on the chair? They'd be like, good for him, I'm ploughing a field. Like, yeah. They might have heard about it too. And it's this real, like, community, but with the past.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So I'm a big fan of the chair. I never thought I would be a big fan of a chair, but I am. And this chair is also what houses the Stone of Scone, or the Stone of Destiny, it's also called.
Yeah, I keep seeing them call it the Stone of Destiny, and I'm like, no, yeah. Go back to Scone. And I know it's because everyone reads it as Scone, not Scone.
Yeah, they do. Scone is a place in Scotland where Scottish medieval monarchs would have been crowned, and the stone would have been used. And the sort of legend is that the stone sings when the rightful king or queen is around. The English stole it. Edward stole it in the 13th century, and it stayed in England for a very long time and was used for their coronations. Eventually, we got it back in 1996, but we kind of had an agreement that we would have it and it would stay with us, but we would let the monarch in England use it in their coronation as like a nice deal. And there's, you know, there's some great stories around it. It was stolen by some students in the 1950s, just a bunch of random people in their 20s who stole it, and it's got some great history itself. But yes, so that will be part of it. That'll be in the chair as well. It will just be the stone. I didn't really see it or notice it during the Queen's coronation, but again, that might be the fuzziness. I don't know if it's like hidden.
Yeah, I don't know where it is. Like, do they like tuck it in? Is underneath? But I've seen pictures of it like being transported, and it's a nice stone. Nice big like brick thing.
Yeah, I think I'm allowed to say this because I'm Scottish. It's just a stone. It looks like just a stone. The meaning is, you know, from what we associate when we look at it, but I wouldn't know it was a special stone. If you put three stones in front of me, I wouldn't know which one's the special one.
They could have just set down any old stone. Yeah. Like, go on, this would be so funny. We'll sit on it ourselves on the bottom.
Actually, there is an old legend that when it was stolen in 1950 by a bunch of students from Glasgow University, they took it back to Scotland and they'd broken it on the journey. And so they got somebody to restore it. And there's this old legend that the restorer or somebody associated with them swapped it. And so the version that was given back to England is not the real version. That's the old story. But if that is true, we don't know where the original is.
Find a special stone.
Yeah. So it could be, who knows? But yes, so what happens during the anointing, the monarch kind of strips away all of the finery, the fancy robes that they've been wearing and all of their stuff. For the Queen's coronation, there was a golden canopy that was held over the monarch because the anointing is private. We do get to hear the words, but we don't see it. I think there's a screen that's being used for Charles's. They've just released pictures.
Like a gazebo, almost, because it's got like three side things. But so it's just like got space for the Archbishop to sneak in and do some anointing. But it's very nice. I was like, if you said like that was going to be your child's play tent, you'd be very impressed. Very pretty canopy.
This is exactly the vibes I think Charles is going for as a children's nursery.
It's very natural. It's got lots of trees and leaves on it. And in the leaves, they've got like the names of the Commonwealth realms embroidered into them, which is very sweet.
They really like doing that, don't they?
Yes. Such an easy win, but I fall for it every time. I'm like, oh, so cute. They put St. Kitts and St. Nevis on there.
I don't mind if it's the Commonwealth realms. I'm not a massive fan of when they do all of the Commonwealth nations, because like a lot of them very deliberately did not want a British monarch and got rid of you. So I don't like when they do that. But I think if it's the Commonwealth realms, I can understand.
And I think it's nice at the coronation because he's their head of state as well. So.
Yeah, for sure. And so the Archbishop uses oil to anoint the king's hands, breast and head. The recipe for the oil is secret, so you won't find it in any of Mary Berry's cookbooks, but it's believed that he's using the same recipe as the Queen's, so that includes, and they've released some details, so like roses, jasmine, orange blossom, cinnamon. Sounds like a Jo Malone perfume, to be honest.
Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds very much like a bride's perfume for their wedding. I bet it smells lovely. I bet he's going off going, ooh, that's not, imagine if it's not bad though, you'd be like, ugh,
yeah,
it's all over my head.
Yeah, and it's going to follow you around all day because it's like oil that are dripping on you. So that's not going to go away for the rest of the day.
It always reminds me of that scene in The Crown where they're like interspersing the coronation with Edward VII's party in Paris, being all like, I never got to have this. But that's very much the scene in my head. And I think it is exactly what happened in the coronation. It's kind of like, it's like the secret bit. And you're like, oh, turn the camera around a bit. I want to see. But at least I'm assuming they're going to film something slightly more exciting this time than.
Well, it might be just the screen, who knows? We do get to hear it, but yeah, we don't get to kind of see it or anything because it's very sacred. And this is where we start to see more parts of the regalia or the crown jewels coming out. So up until now, they've just been kind of sitting there or being held by somebody, I'm not exactly sure. But this is where you start to see them. So there's an ampulla, which is in the shape of an eagle, and that houses the oil. And then they use that to pour the oil onto a special spoon, which is what they use. Like the Archbishop isn't taking the oil and just rubbing it on Charles's chest. He's using, like, it's Vicks, vapor rub or something. He's using a special spoon. And so most of the objects in the regalia were destroyed during the King Charles's, the early King Charles's, the other ones, during that time period. They were destroyed by Cromwell. And so when King Charles II came back, they remade a lot of the objects in the 17th century. But the spoon escaped. And so the spoon is one of the original objects from the 12th century. So it's a very old spoon.
Yes, that's a good quality spoon if it's lasted this long. My spoons don't last that long. Although I suppose they're used like once every 100 years.
Yeah, they probably don't use the special spoon to eat like a Ben and Jerry's ice cream like I do.
Yeah, like, got my cereal. Oh, I've only got the special spoon. Go on, get out anyway. Give a good scrub afterwards.
So this bit we don't see very much of, but it is probably the most important part. We just aren't allowed to see it.
After the, you know, special anointing, there's like anointing part two, when, you know, the shrine's removed and they kind of, they've done all the actual sort of physical anointing, but the prayer carries on and Charles wears his basic outfit, which is probably not what it's called, but it's like, I think they called it like a vestibule, but in my head I just read that as vest, and I'm sure Charles is not going to be wearing a vest in his coronation at Westminster Abbey. But it's like, it's called a Colobium Syndonis, which is very Latin. But essentially it's like the really stripped back version, because now he's all like humble and holy because he's doing the humble holy bit, but it is embroidered with gold, so, yes.
So it's not that humble.
Still a king.
Yeah, I mean, the queen wore like a very, very simple dress for her coronation, and obviously Charles is not going to wear a dress. In my head I've been imagining it as like those floaty shirts that you see in like Pride and Prejudice adaptations. Yeah. You know, the white ones, that's what I'm imagining.
Colin Firth in Pride and Prejudice with like a little rope at the front.
Yeah, exactly, because it'll have to have, and it'll be weirdly low cut. It's always weirdly low cut in those movies.
Get to the chest.
Yeah. I don't know if that's actually going to be what it is. But it probably won't be a dress, so yeah.
There's a fair bit of like, I don't want to say like quick changing throughout the coronation, but there's a fair few outfit changes. Like it's a tour and he's doing like a global show. So it's like he's got to wear like fancy outfits and uniforms, but they've also got to be easy to take on and off in a really short period of time. And at least for the Queen, it was a dress. Like if he's wearing a uniform, that's a lot to take on and off.
It's very difficult to elegantly take off a pair of trousers. I know that from experience.
Oh dear.
He's invested with a bunch of other fancy things, and that's kind of the end of the anointing. Then we get into the investiture, or the presentation of the regalia, as it's called in Charles's liturgy. So in the Queen's, she went to the special chair again, and she started getting presented with objects. And it seems like in the last coronation, the people who carried the objects in were the people who presented it to the Queen. And so again, it was all aristocrats, and it was pretty much the same aristocrats, I believe. This time, they seem to have different people who are presenting the objects from the people who walk in with them. And I think that's a nice touch, because firstly, it means that more people can be included. But also, again, they've kind of gone with like ordinary, quote unquote, people. So obviously they're people who've made incredible achievements in their life. But, and there's no Floella Benjamin, I don't know any of them. they are like, they're not aristocrats, basically. They're not just aristocrats.
Yeah, it's like, it's some of them are, you know, this is another period where they've got some like multi-faith people in. Because some of the regalia is is Christian regalia, and some of it's royal regalia. So they've got the Christians doing the Christian regalia and everyone else doing the non-royal, the non-Christian stuff. So if it's got a cross on it, a Christian's carrying it. It's a little, yeah, fun spotting game when you're watching the coronation. Like, ah, I know that one. That's a Christian, that is.
Yeah, yeah. So the first thing that is presented are the spurs, which apparently they used to put on, but they don't do that anymore, which is a shame. It's very cowboy.
Yeah, I'd put them on. I'd also have a cowboy hat for this moment. I'd just, yep, put on them and be like, Charles, it's coronation. Like, yeah, can't stop me. I'm the king.
And then there's the swords. And during Charles's, there's going to be a psalm that's going to be sung, which is going to be in Greek.
When I was first scrolling through the liturgy, I was like, oh, that is not English. What? And then I scrolled down, I was like, there's the translation.
Yeah. So that's a nice touch, because Philip was Greek. So I guess it's kind of a nod to Philip, which is quite a nice thing. And the sword bit is quite entertaining, or it was in the Queen's anyway. It's very archaic, because basically the sword of state is brought in, and then in the Queen's one they swapped it for a lighter sword, a sword of offering, I think, and then the sword is given to the monarch, and then they give it back, and then it's given to the archbishop to place on an altar. And then the person who presented the sword goes up to the archbishop and gives him money. It was £5 to get the sword back. And then they hold it for a while. And I have no idea why any of that happens.
I just really want to know if that bit's still going to happen. Like at some point, someone will be like, do they carry for five? Is it still going to have the Queen's face on it? Are they going to count out money? Like, I need to know these things. Because that was a bit that was a point when I was making my notes where I think I just lost it, because I found that so funny. I was just like, oh my god, they've got 100 shillings left. It was not that funny, but at the time it was absolutely hilarious. So it's gonna be the highlight of my day.
It's the only item, and I honestly, in the Queen's coronation, the commentator did not explain it. He just was like, yeah, this happens. But it's the only part of the coronation where anybody like pays for anything in the middle of it. Like he's in a shop. Yeah, so the king doesn't actually have the sword for very long. It's, you know, I guess that makes sense. They don't want to just be handing out swords willy-nilly to anybody. Not that I think Charles is going to cut anyone's head off, although it would be a good time to maybe address the Andrew issue.
Plot twist.
Yeah. But yeah, no, it says here in the liturgy, redemption money. The Lord President of the Council places the redemption money on the alms dish held by the dean.
They're still going to pay for it.
They're still going to pay for it for absolutely no reason I can understand. But the sword is meant to symbolise the monarch's role as head of the army and defender of the faith. So that's what that sword symbolises. And it's one of my favourite parts of the ceremony, just because of the weird sort of slightly grubby exchange of money and the fact that Charles gets it for like 3 seconds.
Yeah, it's like, hold the sword. Actually, stand up. We'll put it in. Actually, no, we're taking it back.
Yes. You hold the sword, then I'll hold the sword, then the Archbishop will hold the sword, then I'll hold the sword again. Yeah. But yes, so then it's the Armils, which is just a fancy word for bracelets.
I will be renaming bracelets as Armils for the rest Armils. Of my life.
Yeah. And these apparently represent sincerity and wisdom. Don't know how, but they do, apparently. And actually, from the 1600s up until 1953, they weren't worn. Much like the spurs, they were just sort of shown to the monarch and they were like, oh, very good. And that was it. But Liz chose to wear them. And she actually got a new pair of Armils from the Commonwealth as a gift. So, yeah, I don't know if Charles is going to wear them, if it's going to be a bling bling coronation.
He's going to nod at them, like, love them bracelets.
Yeah. Probably very gendered, isn't it? Of like, oh, well, the woman can wear the bracelets, but the man can't wear the bracelets.
I would want to wear everything. If I was getting crowned, I'd be like, I'm wearing spurs, I'm wearing bracelets, I'm wearing about 5 crowns.
Yeah, but why not? And then it is the robes, I believe, come next.
It is. It's a surprise William appearance.
The surprise William appearance, yes. So it says in the liturgy, I quite like the way it's phrased, it just says, HRH, the Prince of Wales, enters the theatre.
So where'd the theatre come from? We were really happy.
Basically they are dressed in a robe, so they were already wearing a robe, but they took it off for all of the kind of anointing and whatnot, and now they get a new robe. And apparently the robe is like a priestly thing, like priests used to wear robes, and it's sort of the divine right of kings idea. And the robes are generally embroidered with national symbols and imperial eagles and all sorts of stuff. But yeah, the surprise, I think, is that William is going to be involved in dressing Charles in the robe, along with about 17,000 other people. I don't know how many people it takes to put a robe on one man, but yeah, and that's different because last time I didn't even write down who it was, so it was obviously no one important, but it definitely wasn't a member of the royal family.
It wasn't, you know, baby Charles.
Right? No. Yeah, there was like, even like, I think the Duke of Gloucester and things had quite a big role in the ceremony, but he didn't dress the Queen. So that was a surprise, I think, for me anyway, was that William was going to be involved in that part of the ceremony.
Yeah, I've spent like a whole year in my head, every time I visit someone being like, oh, I'm so excited for, you know, to see the Welleses at the coronation. I'm like, they're not going to do anything. Yeah. They're just sitting there. And now William's doing something. I'm like, oh, I was wrong.
That's wrong.
Because I made a mistake.
Yeah, all Charles's fault. So yeah, that'll be nice.
Yeah, I think it's like, it's one of the Christian bits of the thing. And you know, he's the next head of the Church of England. So it's like, it makes sense. If they were going to have William up to do anything, this is a really like sensible thing for him to be handing over.
Definitely, definitely. And then it's the orb. This is an orb.
The one you see in all the pictures.
Yes, yes. It's quite one of the most famous parts of the regalia, I think. And this is meant to symbolise, according to the commentator in the Queen's coronation, this is meant to symbolise that the world is subject to the will of God. Because it's a globe, basically.
Oh, and it's got a cross on it. I get it.
And it's got a cross on it. Yeah, exactly. So that's what it symbolises. And this is one of the ones that is actually given to Charles, and he actually holds it.
For a bit.
Mm-hmm.
They just keep taking things off him. Like, here you go, not anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, they give it to him and he holds it for while the Archbishop says something and then he gives it back. And it gets put on the altar.
Must be like the worst birthday ever. Like, here's a present, not anymore. You can look at this present, you don't get to see it right away.
Yeah, I know, it's unfair. And then it's the ring. So the sovereign's ring, which has the red cross of St. George on it, and this symbolises the marriage to the nation.
I always felt like monarchs should wear that ring. Like, I know it's the crown jewels, but like, you know, in like cheesy books about royals that aren't real, like American royals or, you know, like made up ones, they're always wearing it. Like, it's like the king's like, this is my wedding ring to your mother and this is my wedding ring to the nation. I always felt like they should just wear it. It's like a big thing. I know they'd probably have to make a few more because rings break, but you know, I understand why they don't, but I do think that it's nice. It's a bit like his little, what do they call it? Signet rings.
Yes. I'm sure they used to because Queen Victoria's was made, I've said this before, Queen Victoria's was made for the wrong finger.
Yeah, and it was too big.
No, it was too small. It like left her in agony, basically.
I'd be like, can we adjust my sovereign ring, please? Make it fit.
But yeah, so that's not a very interesting bit. They give him a ring and then they take it back again.
Maybe he doesn't even get to wear it. Maybe it just looks it, like the bracelets. Maybe it's too feminine for him to even wear the ring. He wears a ring. There's like five. Charles, get on it.
Yeah. Right.
I hope Charles wears a ring. This is going to be a real stressful period for my life.
Even though historically they would have been wearing a ring, they immediately put gloves on it anyway. So we wouldn't have seen it for that long, even if he had worn the ring. They get presented with some gloves and he puts one glove on, I think. That's what it says in the thing.
On his right hand.
Right hand. I'm sure that's symbolic. The gloves for the Queen were embroidered with thistle, shamrocks and oak leaves, which were meant to represent England. So I don't know if it's the same pair of gloves. Then I think the reason they get given the gloves is because then they hold some more stuff and they actually hold this.
And it's really, really, this is like the other special stuff, like after the crown, it's the big ones.
Yes, after the gloves comes the scepters slash rods. So there's two. There's a scepter and a rod that are presented, or one of them has a cross, and apparently that is derived from the shepherd's staff.
Uh-huh, I see that.
A very, you know, potent religious image of, there's lots of shepherds in the Bible. And then the other one has a dove, and that is apparently meant to symbolise equity, mercy and spirituality. And so they get presented with these big sticks, basically, and then they hold the big sticks throughout.
I feel like it's a good thing that Charles has probably been trained, because I would definitely end up like tapping them. I'd be using them to like bounce up and down on like their crutches. So this is why I could not be a monarch, because I would break the crown jewels in my coronation and probably get sued.
Yeah, I don't know what happens if you break something in the coronation. I think it's probably bad, but I don't know if they can't really arrest you. So
yeah, it's like, I'm the king, what are you gonna do?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and they aren't small sticks. These are big sticks. They're quite awkward to carry. After that, we get the crown. But what's interesting is in the Queen's ceremony, what happened is all the little pages came out. So each, you know, we know that we talked in the last episode about Charles and Camilla's pages, the people who are basically carrying their train and stuff like that. In the Queen's coronation, all of the dukes and things who were there also had their own little pages. And they all come out and bring coronets in the Queen's version of the coronation. And so I think this is still a big outstanding question of whether anybody else is going to have a coronet at Charles's coronation. The liturgy, I think, suggests no.
Yeah, the only suggestion I've got of someone who could is William. I don't think it's going to be a mass coronet thing like in the Queen's. The only person I think could is William, but yeah, there's no sign of it.
Yeah, that question has not been answered, so we don't know. But in the coronet, I feel like in the liturgy, it would say that people put their crowns on if that was going to happen. Yeah, exactly. It's like 30 pages. So I feel like that's probably not going to happen, which I'm sure some people will be really mad about. But yeah, so that's possibly a difference from the Queen's coronation, is that it might just be the crowns that are being brought out and not our little crown for everyone. And in the original coronation, everybody put their coronets on at the moment of the big crowning. So everybody had their own wee crown at the same time he had his big crown. But we think that it's probably just going to go straight into Charles being crowned. And that will be with the big daddy of the crown jewels, St. Edward's crown.
It was made for Charles II, now it's used for Charles III, and it's someone in the speaking over a bit, the commentator is going to mention that.
And yes, be like, of course.
Isn't it symbolic? Isn't it symmetry? It's going to be cracking.
Yeah, so that's going to be the big moment. That is the coronation of the coronation, is the moment you put the crown on somebody's head. I mean, I would vote for them singing Zadok the Priest again, because I don't really like that, but they're not.
Boring bits. They're doing fanfares.
Yeah, everyone says God Save the King, and then there's more trumpets. And to be fair, I do like the trumpets. And then apparently the Abbey bells are going to ring as well.
Yeah, for 2 minutes. It's quite a long time.
Which is, yeah, that's quite a long time, yeah. And then there's going to be, like, gunfire and whatnot. So it will be, you know, impactful, I think, even if it's not all the people in the room putting on their own little crowns. They are going to make it, like, a moment.
I do quite like how it's like, and the guns are going to be done in the UK, which makes sense, in Gibraltar again, like on the ships and in Bermuda. Like, who was like, oh, we need another place. Bermuda? Let's ask Bermuda to do it. Why Bermuda?
Yeah, it doesn't seem like there's any like other Commonwealth nations or anything.
Just Bermuda. Lucky Bermuda get to do with fire. Maybe they've just got some new like guns and they really want to use them. I don't know. But yeah, I keep thinking, like, this whole bit's been going on, and I just want to know where Camilla is, like, sat. Because there's only one throne, and there's lots of people around, so is she, like, sat in the, like, congregation? Has they got, like a baby throne on the side?
Exactly, like, when the Queen was crowned, Philip was not becoming king. He was just a duke, just a prince. So he was part of the ceremony, but not until the next section. And so he just kind of sat with everybody else, as far as I know. But we don't know with Camilla, because we haven't actually seen a coronation with a queen there. This part, all we've said to date, is just Charles.
I don't like this is a whole, like, very big emotional, like, dramatic thing happening, but I'm really interested in, like, the really minute detail of it. Like, because Westminster Abbey, again, is a really weird abbey because you don't see anything unless you're like right at the front. And the altar's not huge. Like,
no.
I know that's where the Queen was crowned, but the Queen was, I'm sure she wasn't that much smaller than Charles and Camilla are, but in my head, she's this tiny little 29-year-old woman. And these are like fully grown adults. So I'm like, they just feel bigger. And there's two of them.
That's actually an interesting thing, is like when I was watching the Queen's coronation back, I always forget it's in Westminster Abbey because it looks so different. So, like, obviously, firstly, it's carpeted. Like, the whole thing is carpeted, which, for the Queen's one, it was anyway, which, you know, normally we're used to that really iconic floor on Westminster Abbey. But it's, yeah, it's all carpeted. But also, I think the seating, because there was, like, 8,000 people there or something, they changed the seating and they had, like, tiered seating. And I feel like the seating started further back. So the Abbey actually looks really quite big in the Queen's coronation, much bigger than it feels in my head when there's loads of seats in it normally. But there's only going to be 2,000 people there, so I think the seating might end up just being the same as it is for most events. And if that's the case, then I don't know, it just doesn't feel big enough.
I can't quite believe there was like 4 times the amount of people that you get in a normal, like, Westminster service there, because I'm like, where did they all go? Because Westminster Abbey's big, but when you're in it, it's not that big. It's not huge.
No, they had to construct tiered seating, like concert seating almost.
I mean, I remember reading that the reason they didn't do it was because of like safety issues, but which makes sense. I can definitely see why you wouldn't want like a bunch of very important people and old people sat on like rickety, recently designed seats. But also at the same time, I just feel like visually it would be quite funny to see clunking their way up these like metal seats. Anyway, not going to happen, but I feel like that would be fun.
Yeah, it would definitely be interesting. We don't know much about the sort of interior design and how the thing is actually going to look. I think that's really an outstanding question. So that's interesting. And like, yeah, the practicalities, like, where are people going to sit and where are the pages going to stand? And, you know, there's all these like practical details that are not in the liturgy and we don't really know. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens on the day.
Yeah, that's something else I thought. I was like, where are the pages going to be like throughout the thing? And also, like, we see Westminster Abbey during weddings or like services where there's royal family there en masse, but like this is a state occasion, so are they going to get booted down the church a bit, which I personally think would be hilarious, but I also don't know if they're just going to be like where they always sit in their like little royal section.
And so then the presentation of the regalia, have there's some trumpets and then there's some blessings before we get into the next big bit, which is the enthronement and the homage. Do you say homage?
I say homage, but I'm also quite fancy when I say words. So I don't know. This would be another point. Like, after the crowning, as soon as the crowning stops and start ringing those bells, go to the toilet and get a drink. Because yes. You've got about probably 5 minutes before the next big thing starts. So putting that in there.
Unless you're super into the Greek Orthodox Archbishop of Great Britain, then I think you can miss the fanfare, the blessings and the anthem before you get into the enthronement. So this is break number two, if you need it. And then, yeah, we're getting into the enthronement and the homage slash homage, which we don't know exactly how to say it. And so there's another chair. The third chair. We've had the wee chair, we've had the big chair, and now there's like a throne. And in the Queen's, this is the one that was on a platform. It's really interesting. So they are basically lifted onto the chair. And apparently, according to the commentator of the Queen's coronation, this traces back to when the monarch was crowned on a mound of earth and then lifted onto the shoulders of the peers so they could be shown off to the people.
I think we should do more thrones on earth. It's fun.
But yeah, that's apparently the origin of it. And I would much prefer if it was just a mound of earth and then afterwards you put Charles on a piggyback on the back of the Duke of Norfolk's shoulders and just walked him around town.
I bet this is a bit that the Archbishop of Canterbury was like, please can we practice? And Charles was like, it'll be fine, it's good. No, I really need to practice. Imagine if I drop you. Imagine if I like collapse onto him, like anything could happen.
Well, actually, it's interesting because when I was watching the Queen's, moving to that chair is the single most nerve-wracking thing I have ever witnessed. Because the Queen was wearing the crown. They're wearing the crown at this point and carrying the big sticks. And they've got their robe on. And they have to walk up a bunch of steps, or she had to walk up a bunch of steps, and then be lifted into the seat while wearing this robe, while holding these sticks, with a priceless crown on their head. And it looked like, I'm sure that it was all fitted and wonderful for the Queen, but it looked really wobbly when the Queen wore it. And the whole time, I mean, obviously I know what happened because it happened in 1953. So I know, but the whole time I was like, oh my gosh, she's going to fall off her head. She's going to drop it. She's walking upstairs in this crown. It looks like it's going to fall. So if anything is going to go wrong, it's probably in this moment.
Oh God. It's like, it's such a like in every other like European monarchy, like this is their big thing. They don't get the coronation, they just get like the enthronement or the signing of papers, the investiture right at the beginning. But like, first of all, it's the third throne he sat on this whole thing. But also like, it's such a small part of the service, but it's such like a big part of the coronation in a weird way. Like if you were going to rank the important parts of the coronation, this is right up there. But also it's like a very quick blink and you miss it, sitting on a seat.
the throne doesn't even look as nice as Edward's chair. It feels like a downgrade, even though it's not.
Yeah, it's not like a proper throne, like in, you know, say open of Parliament, like a great big velvety thing. It's just a slightly less important chair than the last one we sat on.
Yeah, so it's a bit underwhelming. And then we get into the homage, who knows? And this is where there's going to be another substantial departure.
Cutting it down. Charles was like, we're cutting this bit down. I'm going to be wearing a really heavy crown. We're cutting it down, guys.
So in the Queen's coronation, all the bishops did the homage. And then they basically they go and they pledge their loyalty to the monarch. And all the bishops did it. And then all the princes and royal dukes who were in attendance did it. And then all of the peers did it. And they basically have to go and kneel in front of the monarch and sort of swear their allegiance. And we found out, this was rumoured anyway, but we found out from the liturgy that it's going to be the Archbishop who does it on behalf of the Church of England. And then Prince William is going to do it on behalf of the royals. So that is basically, the peerage is gone, basically.
Yeah, we've sacked them off.
Yeah. because it was interesting because like with the Queens, they had one person who would represent all of the dukes and he would go and do it. Then another one who represented all of the marquises, and then another one who represented all of the earls, and they all had to do it separately. And then the Queen also had a bunch of people standing around her. I'm not exactly sure who they were, but they were all standing around her. And so some of them were like earls and barons. And when their representative went up and did it, they all had to kneel down. And there was actually a very funny moment in the Queen's coronation where I think it was the barons, the guy went up and he kneeled, and there was a couple of people who were around the Queen who were like standing on the steps up to the throne, and they had to kneel because they were barons as well, and one of them almost fell face first into the carpet and had to be held up by the guy who was next to him. Very funny. It's the only thing that I saw in the whole of the Queen's coronation that went wrong was this guy almost face planting. So yeah, that's probably very sensible to cut back on that, so there's less opportunity for people to fall over. I think there's two things that I thought about those parts is that, firstly, really pleased. Like, peers do not have to swear allegiance to the monarch separately anymore. They all, I think, in order to take up a position in the House of Lords, I think you have to do an oath of some kind. So they don't need to do a separate one of the coronation. Really, the people who need to swear allegiance to the monarch are the people who work for him, his family. So William is representing those, and the church, and the Archbishop is representing those. I don't think that just because you were born a duke doesn't necessarily mean you have to follow Charles anymore, especially because no longer peers don't automatically get a place in the House of Lords anymore.
Yeah, and it, you know, it was always the bit where, I don't think it felt the most out of touch because it's a coronation, but it was like, here are all the rich people and all the fancy people who are born into these fancy positions doing something to another rich, fancy person born into a position. And there was nothing in there that was kind of like, it didn't feel like it was all about his or the Queen's role, or, you know, her role as head of state, or her role as head of the church, or her role as, you know, head of her family. It all felt very much archaic in a bad way.
Yeah.
Not like a nice tradition. It felt like, oh, we've always done this, so we need to carry on doing it. Whereas now it feels like we're representing the things that are really important for the monarch to do his job.
Yeah. You know, people were worried about how modern the coronation was going to be and whether it was going to be like, I mean, the Daily Mail keeps saying it's a woke coronation. But I don't think that crowning somebody who was just because they were born into a position and then having somebody else who was also just born into a position swear allegiance to them, but not having a duke there is, but it makes it woke.
it just makes it shorter.
Yeah, it just makes it shorter. There's still multiple people there who were only there because of this, you know, a quirk of birth. And I actually think that this bit will be surprisingly moving. Like, I'm not a massive fan of Charles or William. I think they both do their job well, but they're not, I don't personally watch things because they do them or follow along with their work, because I'm mostly interested in the women anyway, and their areas of work are not necessarily that interesting to me. So it's just a personal preference. I don't dislike them, but I don't follow them that closely. But I do expect that when William kneels in front of Charles and pledges his loyalty to him, I think that's going to be quite moving.
It's so layered because it's the Prince of Wales doing it to the King. But it's also like a son and a father. Like, it's Charles's firstborn son and, you know, William's only surviving parent. And also for William, like, at some point in his life, you know, as far as we know, he's going to be in Charles's position. George will be doing that to him. And George has just been the page for Charles. And it's all going to be very like, this is why things like coronations and monarchies are so interesting, because there's this really long interwoven history. And you can trace it back. And it's like history in the making. And for William and for George and for Charles, this is it for them. Like, this is the big moment, because for them, it's seeing what their future is.
Yeah. And I think there's something about that act of kneeling as well, of like making yourself vulnerable, I guess. And I think with the Queen's coronation, there was all of this, and maybe a lot of this is us now looking back on it, but there was a lot of weight attached to Philip doing this with the Queen, because again, it was not just a prince or a duke doing that to the Queen. It was a husband submitting essentially to the will of his wife, which was very uncommon for the time. It's still uncommon now, I think, but it was very uncommon in the time. And so I think that, you know, it's very difficult not to look at this through the lens of what's happened with the family in the last 2 years. You know, I tried to stay out of all of that drama, so I'm not going to get into it in too much detail, but it's undeniable. It has not been an easy time. And even before that, there was all these stories about Charles and William's relationship being tense and being difficult. And so it kind of feels like
forgiveness.
Yeah, the closure of a difficult time in their family relationship, and the putting behind them of any tension and stress they've had and any failings on Charles's part as a father or whatever. It feels like putting that behind them. Maybe I'm attaching too much meaning to it, but I feel like that's what's going to come out of it, is like that's going to be a really meaningful, impactful moment.
I mean, I'm getting goosebumps literally talking about it, so I am probably going to cry when so I'm just gonna throw that one out there. But it's since kind of Louis was born, there's always been this real thawing of relations between William and Charles, and I'm entirely putting down to the fact that Charles is enamored with Louis.
Louis isn't.
But it's like, I think, you know, the William who got married in 2011, I couldn't have seen him willingly, happily doing this. He might have done it out of duty, whereas now I think he's probably been like feeling very sort of honoured to be asked to represent the family, because he could have chosen Anne and they could have made that a big lovely thing, and you know, they could have chosen Camilla, they could have done anyone, but it's very touching that it's William.
Yeah, and it kind of, I think, as well as the sort of family dynamic, it's also like an acceptance of William accepting his role, because again, there's been tons of stories over the years that William doesn't really want to be king and that he hates the job and he only does it because he has to. And I think that over the last maybe 5 years or so, you've gotten the sense that whether he would choose this life or not, he has accepted what his situation is. And more than that, he has kind of decided to make the best of what he's got and what he's been given in life. And I think understands his responsibility a lot more now than he did 5 years ago. And so it does also feel like a kind of, it's not just him recognizing or pledging loyalty to the king, it's also him sort of accepting that he's a representative of the family and that his job is loyalty to the king, essentially. So it kind of, it just feels very meaningful.
It's gonna be my favorite part of this whole thing. I'll be like, oh, I'm so emotional, there's all that stuff going on. I'm like, oh, but William did it.
And then after that, there is the homage of the people. The Archbishop of Canterbury will call on everybody basically in the UK and of any of the other realms to make their homage in heart and voice to their undoubted king, defender of all. And it says, all who desire in the Abbey and elsewhere say together, and then they swear their allegiance. And this has been a bit controversial.
It literally says, all who desire in the thing. It doesn't say do it.
I know, it's the thing that I like is that like it doesn't even expect the people who are in the Abbey to actually want to do it. It's totally up to individuals. Nobody, I'm going to be sitting at home in my pyjamas. Nobody can force me to say anything. And yet it's become very controversial because people are like, oh, but as an ordinary citizen, why do I have to pledge allegiance to the king and blah, blah, blah. People seem to be talking about it as if they're being forced to do something. He's just asking if you'd like to, it would be nice.
It's a little moment where they're like, do you want to be involved at home? You poor people on the sofa. Like, go on, you can say it as well.
Yeah.
It's not a big... I mean, I'm personally, it would be really funny if he says, all who desire, and no one's in the Abbey. That would be great. But, like, I mean, I understand, like, if I was looking at it as a full-fledged, burned-down Buckingham Palace Republican, I would be angry. And I can definitely, I understand. I don't necessarily think it was the right decision, but I think it was a sweet decision. I think it came from a good place where someone thought, oh, let's let everyone be involved. And if you want to, they can say it. That's nice. And, you know, maybe it's not the right choice. I think there was no malice in this decision. It was clearly a decision where they were trying to be inclusive to every single person that Charles will be the monarch of, which I can't be angry with. So I quite like it. I'm not going to say it. Don't get me wrong. I'm not going to start pledging allegiance to anyone. But I will. This is the part where I'm going to have to completely avoid the internet for about 3 weeks just to save my own sanity. But it's going to be quite sweet. I want to watch people say it. They're going to definitely cut to the crowds outside saying it. And that's going to be very sweet.
I think you're right. Like, I see both sides of it. I think ultimately nobody's being forced to do anything. So if you don't want to do it, don't do it. I can see where they were coming from, because it's basically like, instead of getting people who just happen to be born as dukes or earls or whatever, getting them to swear allegiance, we want this to be, I suppose, the people's king. We want the people of the country to want to support the monarchy. And we want to get them involved rather than it just being people who happen to, you know, essentially you are being asked to take the role that a duke would have taken at the last coronation. So I think they see it as like a egalitarian thing of like anybody can be involved. But I can also see how other people would take it as like, this is a bit North Korean. Like, why are we being asked to swear allegiance to our head of state in this way? That's not very British. We don't want to do it. So I can understand both sides. I'm not that fussed about it. Because I, as you say, I understand the intention behind it, and I also will just not do it because that's fine.
I'm not getting arrested for not doing
exactly. But I can see why, and I probably would have left it out if it was me.
Yeah, I like they put in the liturgy, there's literally a whole part where they're like, this is a joyous moment and it's for the people and this has never ever happened before. Yeah. And I kind of read it like, maybe there's a reason for that.
Yeah, maybe.
But clearly no one had any foresight about that when they were writing this liturgy and having up with this idea, because it was just a nice thought and it's not, you know, it's an out of touch thought. That's what it is. It's like when your grandma's like, oh, you know, you met a nice man recently, but like you're a lesbian or something. But she's trying to do a nice thing. She just doesn't quite, she's just not thought it through. It's that kind of thing.
After that, there's some more trumpets. There's some God Save the Kinging. And then we get into Camilla. Now, I'm not going to go through exactly what happens with Camilla's because we've already just said it all and it'll just be repeating it. But basically the regalia stuff is presented to her. She's crowned and enthroned and anointed in the same way that Charles is. It's just slightly smaller.
I like the fact that I just like, now what to do, they shove Charles on the poor person seat?
Yeah, I don't know. And also, apparently, the anointing for Camilla will be public.
Oh, we get to see the anointing. Shout out to Camilla, honestly. Bonus.
Which will be interesting. So this is the first time that a coronation of a queen consort has ever been televised. And the first time potentially that we'll get to see an anointing.
This is the coronation that the Daily Mail thought we were going to get, but like just the Camilla bit, like coronation light, like they just anoint the forehead rather than everything and just do some of the regalia and not all of it. Because this is where this Queen Mary's crown's coming in, isn't it? That's the crown she's being crowned with. Ah, see, smart.
And then there's just a lot of talking and singing again.
Singing, praying, singing.
In the Queen's, she went to the altar, took off a crown.
Yeah, it's during the Te Deum that they swap crowns. So it's after like 8 songs.
Yeah.
It's quite a way into the singing. Put some new robes on, put a new hat on. Yeah, so it's quick change part 2. This is the other changing. So much changing in this one thing. I never changed my outfit in the middle of a church service before, but Charles is doing it a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's like communion and prayers and religious stuff. I didn't pay much attention to any of that because it's not part of like the steps of the coronation that have to happen. I'm sure it is in some way, but it's not like, you know, the oath, the anointing, but, you know. So there's a lot of that for ages. And then the national anthem happens and then everyone leaves. Yay, it's over.
I'm going to be honest. When I watched Will and Kate's wedding last night and they sang God Save the Queen, it sounded really weird. And I was like, okay, that changed quickly.
Yeah, we've gotten used to it.
Queen sounds wrong, which shows how quickly I change.
Yeah, very fickle. And something that actually, it happened after I wrote my notes, so I don't have anything prepared, but something that's new is that on the way out, Charles will receive a greeting by leaders and representatives from faith communities, Jewish, Hindu, Sikh, Muslim, and Buddhist. And he'll stand in front of them, and they don't pledge like allegiance as such, because he's not the leader of their church, and that would be wrong. But they basically say that they acknowledge the value of public service and they unite with people of all faiths in thanksgiving and in service with you for the common good. So it's essentially like not saying we're pledging allegiance to you, but we are going to help you in your mission to make the world a better place kind of thing.
Yeah, it was really, and I think, you know, there's a bit right at the end of the liturgy where they're like, thank you to the Jewish community, because it's on Shabbat, so yes, it's on the Jewish holy day. But they're like, it sounds like the Jewish people were like, oh, we'll just shuffle things around a bit to make it work, which I just love.
We'll just change Shabbat this week.
Just shuffle it around. But, you know, this was the part that, you know, the Daily Mail was going to be frothing at the mouth over. But it's so Charles. And, you know, it's a bit that I really wanted there to be there for Charles, because I think it's something he's going to be really happy to have there. Like, that'll be a favourite part of the coronation, is going to be the part we get to talk to the other faiths, because he likes doing that.
You know, it goes back to what happened at the beginning of like having multiple representatives or representatives of multiple faiths coming in at the beginning. Like, they are not involved in the ceremony. So it's not like Charles is going to be there and be like, I pledge to uphold the values of Buddha. You know, he's still doing what he's supposed to do, which is basically sitting there and saying, I'm part of the Church of England. Isn't the Church of England great? And that's what he has to do. And he's anointed as the head of the Church of England. He's not being anointed in the Islamic faith. But that doesn't mean that he can't recognize that those other religions exist and are major parts of British culture. And so I think that it's not like pushing any kind of woke agenda like some places like to suggest. All it's doing is recognizing the reality of modern day Britain, which is that there are people who are not part of the Church of England. Most people are not part of the Church of England.
Yeah, and then, you know, it's the other face, and it's all the governor generals from the Commonwealth realms. And I quite like how it just says the king acknowledges the greeting, which just kind of makes me think he's going to wave at them, like, thanks, guys, I'm here.
Thumbs up.
But it's like, it's the last moment of the service, of the coronation service. And I think it's a nice to end with, like, not England. It's like, and here is everyone else. Also, you're here, and you're the final image of the coronation service is the king going to be talking to people from different religions and people with different ethnicities and genders. And I think that's going to be visually very significant and a real stark difference from, you know, the Queen's one, when there was no Jewish people in that church.
Well, there was a rabbi in the church, but he didn't have any role in anything.
He didn't get to pop up and, no, at the end and greet her.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's actually, like, it is different, but the Queen did have representatives from other faiths in her coronation. They were just guests rather than participants. So it's not as drastically different. And as we've said earlier, the Queen did things that everyone was like, oh, this is terrible. And then now, 50 years later, or 70 years later, you know, you can't, the Queen's coronation was the standard and Charles is ruining it compared to, you know, I think every generation, when it's William's time, people are like, oh, but he didn't do it the way Charles did it. And I don't like, you know. And then it's the coronation procession.
Procession part two.
Procession part two. So they will go from Westminster Abbey back to Buckingham Palace. And they will be in the gold state coach rather than the coach they had, the Diamond Jubilee coach from earlier. That coach was made in 1760s. Apparently it is incredibly uncomfortable, which is one of the reasons why it's not being used both ways. It also weighs 4 tons. And so it only goes at a walking pace. And so I'm expecting it to be an incredibly awkward thing of just like this very, very slow procession.
I just want to know, like, which horses get that job?
Yeah.
Because they're going to be like, you need a really strong horse, but also a horse that's not going to be like, oh, come on.
Yeah.
Like, the temperaments of the horses, they're going to have to do like temperament checks for weeks now, being like, right, Teddy, you've made it.
Yeah.
Boris, you not so much.
Yeah. But of course, Boris is a loose cannon. So yes, and this procession is going to be much larger than the way to the church. We don't know exactly who's going to be in the original procession, but we know this one's going to be much bigger. So there's going to be about 6,000 armed forces personnel from across the Commonwealth and the British overseas territories, and they are going to be led by Princess Anne, who has been given the completely confusing title of Gold Stick in Waiting. I don't know what that means. I don't know. I even looked it up on like the Wikipedia page, and it doesn't explain where the title comes from. Probably 600 years ago, somebody got given a gold stick, and now we just call them Gold Stick in Waiting. But basically, her job is going to be to lead the military procession behind King Charles and Queen Camilla.
Which is so sweet. It's a lovely thing for the sister to do.
Yes. Big fan. We love Princess Anne. I think having a woman do it is great. It's kind of a personal decision for Charles, of like his sister who stood by him and really kept the monarchy going for quite a long time now with all of the work that she does. Oh yes, I think it's an interesting thing because it probably means that Anne will be in uniform.
Yeah, that kind of threw everyone.
Yeah, because we still don't really know what the royals are going to wear or what anyone is going to wear actually for this coronation. We've been led to believe it might be day dress. So shorter dresses and hats perhaps, but we don't actually know anything about that. But I think if Anne is wearing military uniform, then even if the working royals wear gowns, that's just like one less person who's going to be wearing a gown. And so I think looks makes it even more awkward if only like 4 people who are there, the Duchess of Gloucester, Alexandra, Sophie and Kate, if there's only 4 of them who are wearing gowns other than Camilla, that's just going to look more awkward than if there was 5, you know. It's interesting.
Everyone had just decided the working royals were wearing gowns with absolutely no basis in fact. And then everyone's like, Anne's not wearing a gown. Oh, maybe, perhaps not. I'm interested. I'm fascinated by what they're going to be wearing because obviously all the invitations we've seen are day dress and lounge suits, which sound like tracksuits, but are not. But also there's so many rumours. Everyone's like, oh, there's actually two receptions the day before, because one's a tiara one and we just haven't seen that invitation yet. And I'm like, you were just making things up. And I really hope everyone is right. I really hope there is a secret special reception with tiaras. And I hope that it's actually all the royals are wearing tiaras.
Yeah.
And Anne's going to have a tiara and her uniform.
And uniform, yeah.
They get the whole thing. And, you know, I'm not going to be sitting there like, oh, no, Kate's wearing a tiara. Because somewhere deep inside my body, I do believe she's going to rock up in a gown and a tiara. But also, I'm not going to be particularly disappointed if she doesn't. Because, you know, everything I've seen has led me to believe that there are no tiaras at this thing. Apart from, you know, the crowns. I think it's Anne being in uniform is it's the sweetest thing. It's very Anne. And it's also, you know, it sidesteps. It really kind of, I don't say it elevates her, but I think after the kind of last few years with everything that's been going on with, you know, people ranked far higher than her in the line of succession and, you know, people officially more important than her, to give her like this key moment at the coronation is like, it's like an honour. It's a thank you. It's like the biggest thank you Charles could give her.
Yeah, definitely. It's the right decision. And then so this whole procession will go along. I don't know exactly how long that's going to take, but probably quite a while, because it can only move at a walking pace. And it's going to be longer and will eventually end up at Buckingham Palace, where the working members of the royal family will go onto the balcony to watch a fly past.
I was reading about, you know, the Queen's procession, and it was so much bigger. Like, it was a 7.2-kilometre route, which is, like, God knows how many times the size of this one. And it was, like, 29,000 soldiers, and there were also 15,000 lining the route. So it's, like, so much smaller than that, but also bigger than anything I've ever seen in my life. And yeah. I can't quite get my head around that.
I mean, how long did it must have taken? Let me see how long it took. 2 hours.
At that point, I'd be like, I'm bored now. A bit like when we were watching the Queen's funeral and they had that big long walk to get to Windsor. And I was like, oh my God, stop walking. Get in a car.
That's why the coverage of the coronation took 8 hours, because you had a 3-hour ceremony and you had a 2-hour
procession.
And then you had all of the other coverage of people arriving and stuff. So yeah, goodness me. Hopefully it'll be shorter than that, because I'm not staying there. This is another time to go and make a cup of tea and do your bits and bobs.
Yeah, just watch them all get in the carriages and set off, and then once they've all started, go off for a break, and then you'll be back for the fly pass.
Yeah. and then I think obviously there's like the coronation concert and stuff that's going to happen, and you know, so we'll carry on. But that's the actual coronation done, I think.
It's going to be really interesting, like, as a historical moment, is going to be really like interesting to watch and see a coronation happen. All I've seen really is people, whether they like the monarchy or not, complaining about it because it's not what they imagined in their head. But I think, you know, from what we've heard and from what we've seen, I think it, you know, it's not a great drastic change from coronations of the past. It's just like an updated version, like you would do with anything. Like, you update birthday parties when your child groups, so you're one and they start being 10. You don't do the same birthday party. And it's the same sort of logic.
I definitely agree. I think that time has changed. And, you know, for years and years, we've heard about how Charles is going to be this radical. He's going to strip back the monarchy to just him and Camilla and Charles and William and Kate. And nobody else is going to work. That hasn't happened. And he's not going to give Edward the Duke of Edinburgh title because he doesn't want more dukes in the family. That didn't happen. He's going to swear at his coronation to be defender of faith, not defender of the faith. And he's going to become a Muslim in the middle of the ceremony. That's obviously not happening. So all of these ideas that people have come up with over the years about how he's going to be this radical monarch, whether it's through, you know, outside factors, because he hadn't factored in the fact that Harry would have left the family, and we don't know whether it's because of his plans have just changed, whether this was always the plan. But either way, he has not done anything particularly radical since he took the throne, and the coronation doesn't seem like it's going to be any different. Charles is not imposing his idea of the world onto us during the coronation. What he's doing is recognizing what already exists, which is that there are multiple people of different faiths and different cultures and different ethnicities who live in the UK. He's made small changes to modernize it without losing the core of what a coronation is supposed to be about. And I think, you know, with moments like Zadok the Priest and with William doing his homage, I think there's still going to be several moments where, like,
people get chills, which is all you really want from a coronation.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's really exciting to go in because there is still so many little bits we don't know. Like, we don't know, is anyone going to have a coronet? We don't know the dress code. We don't know if working royals, you know, the royal family are just bringing, you know, the big ones, or are they going to bring the kids, you know?
Mm.
We know George is going. Is Charlotte going? Is Louis going? My mum asked me earlier if Louis was going, and I was like, I don't know. But, like, there's enough. We don't know about the, you know, the first procession in as much detail. Mm. We don't know how long they're going to be on the balcony for. We don't know. Like, there was a bit in the Queen's coronation where right at the end of the day at 9:45 p.m. she came back on the balcony,
yeah,
to do the lights of London or whatever it was called when they switched all the lights on. Like, is that going to have like a surprise final moment?
Yeah.
We've got like 2 days after that and the day before. There is actually a lot going on. And I think this is a 2-hour chunk in the middle of it. And even then we don't know everything. So I think even if everything you've heard so far, you're like, I don't like it. You know, like, oh, it's not what I wanted. Like, there's enough going on there that something in there you probably will like.
So thank you very much for listening to our coronation special episode. I'm hoping that after you've listened to this episode, when you're sitting with your friends watching the coronation, you can be like, they do this because the monarch used to be crowned on a mound of earth, and everyone will think you're really intelligent, and you actually just got it from the podcast. So we're really helping you all to be able to show off to your friends and family about how much you know about the monarchy. But other than that, it is a goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me.